You're listening to In the Vault, a KPMG banking industry podcast series.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to today's podcast. I'm Liz Lamadou, a principal in KPMG's banking and capital markets tax practice. And today I'm joined by my partners, Stephanie Humphrey and Dan Winnick, both from our banking tax practice. Stephanie is in our accounting methods and credits group, and Dan is in our Washington National Tax International team. Welcome, Steph and Dan.
Thanks, Liz.
Thanks for having us.
Glad you could be here. So today we're going to chat about corporate alternative minimum tax, or CAMT. So we know it's been years now, believe it or not, since it was introduced. We've got a bunch of guidance, including, I think, the latest back in February 2026 with Notice 2026-7. And so I want to check in and see, where are we now? We started with a new law, requires a new set of books somewhere between financial statement accounting and tax. There was a lot of uncertainty, even as the guidance started rolling out. So can you just set the stage for us? Where are taxpayers in 2026, and what are they focusing on now for CAMT?
So the guidance process for CAMT has been a bit of a journey. We started out with several notices before proposed regs in 2024. And then starting in 2025, we got several notices that modified some aspects of the proposed regs. In addition, we received further guidance on the treatment of partnerships. The combination of all the guidance that's come out so far is that taxpayers have a lot of optionality on how they apply different parts of the regs. The proposed regulations had a rule requiring taxpayers to adopt many of the regulations to be able to rely on any of the proposed regulations. These were called the specified regs. Now, taxpayers can pick and choose among different sections of the proposed regulations for the most part, and also have some opportunities to elect among different options under the notices. So it's really important for taxpayers to think about how these options will affect them, not only currently, but into the future, because there are often requirements to be consistent once you decide to rely on one piece of guidance going into the future.
I agree, Dan. I think that some of the guidance has been particularly taxpayer friendly. And is it fair to say that through the guidance journey, we've gotten to a point where the conversation has really shifted from, am I in scope? Do I have to do this? To, okay, I'm in it. How do I comply? Down to the nitty gritty more.
I think that's right. So in general, the way CAMT works is once you're an applicable corporation subject to CAMT, you remain an applicable corporation. For those corporations that were clearly in scope, and that includes a lot of banking institutions, we've moved on to how to determine that CAMT liability. And it's just rolled into the compliance process. But it's a factor in thinking about what decisions you make as part of your overall federal tax strategy.
And what would you say that our banks are experiencing in practice right now? And I won't tell you to give the answer without using the word modeling, because I feel like that's what we talk about most often. So what do you see taxpayers actually doing?
So taxpayers are indeed modeling out the different options under the regulations, in particular, some of the items that Steph is going to talk about related to the new relief under Section 174 and for intangibles under Section 197. Another area where we see a lot of modeling is related to partnership investments, especially investments in tax credit partnerships. Another fork in the road for CAMT is whether certain aspects of the provisions apply to a particular taxpayer. So, for example, taxpayers that have net operating losses from before 2020 might find themselves in CAMT in the year that they utilize those NOLs. So there are particular triggers that are likely to raise a question about CAMT, and we see a special attention when those come up.
Yeah, I think what I've seen, as Dan noted, pre-2020, NOLs, definitely a trigger for CAMT, as well as tax credits. A lot of our financial institutions have a lot of tax credits that can kind of create a CAMT concern and raise that modeling need that we will reference probably a few times in this discussion. I think the most significant guidance that we got was the most recent, the notice 2026-7, which provided relief with regard in particular to 174. It did a few other things, but in particular, focusing on the 174 relief. The 174 guidance from OB3 that allows taxpayers to accelerate the unamortized basis of domestic 174 tended to create some pretty sizable CAMTI issues for many banks. Those numbers tended to be quite large, and that acceleration, while good from a taxable income perspective, was bad from a CAMTI perspective initially. This notice provided relief on that particular aspect of the 174 change. So it doesn't relieve all 174 differences, 174 amortization in the future or current deduction, if different from book, may still be an issue. That accelerated basis is relieved as a result of this notice. So in a lot of cases, that created a lot more flexibility in the modeling for banks when they could kind of take those large numbers out of, in particular, their 2025 CAMTI calculations.
Yeah, I think this is another example of the guidance being considered favorable.
Absolutely.
What areas are you seeing that still require quite a bit of judgment from the taxpayer?
So there are two sets of judgment in my mind when it comes to CAMTI. The first is there are a number of areas where Treasury and the IRS have given taxpayers explicit options. One example that we keep coming back to is in the case of partnerships, where there are different ways that taxpayers that are applicable corporations can take a partnership into account. In cases like that, taxpayers, because you'll be required to use the same method once you adopt one of the methods that Treasury has offered in future years, again, need to model out how it's going to look over the life of the partnership. There are also cases where there's legal ambiguity or perhaps one interpretation of the statute that differs from some of the options that are given in notice. And in all of those cases where there's legal ambiguity, taxpayers need to consider the guidance that exists and how it applies to their situation. For all the guidance that's been issued under CAMTI so far, it is an entirely new tax system. And so there are bound to be many questions as both taxpayers and the government work through the new statute.
Steph, as you're working with banks on these computations, what are you seeing and what opportunities do you think banks should be taking a closer look at?
Yeah, I mean, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I will continue to emphasize the modeling point, multiple years of kind of modeling out potential CAMTI liability. And I think the key decision points and things to consider are around usage of older NOLs, modeling those out and running those out to when hopefully they'll be fully used and understanding the implications from a CAMTI perspective. Also looking at future 174, as I mentioned earlier, the accelerated unamortized basis really received some relief, but there could still be book tax differences between tax 174 versus what's capitalized for book purposes as internally developed software. And in some cases, those numbers can still be quite large. So keeping an eye on those and understanding those differences are really helpful. And if there are particular years that are problematic or a taxpayer might be looking at a potential CAMTI liability, there are accounting method planning that can be done to change the timing from a tax perspective to kind of relieve those 1 year or blip situations. Similarly with tax credits, you know, partnership investment tax credits are also just buying transferable credits. Those are things to keep an eye on as well. And then the last one I'll note, with OB3, the regime that was previously FIDI, now referred to as FIDE, changed. And we are finding that some banks may find benefit with that regime that they didn't historically. Those numbers are not likely to create CAMTI liabilities, but it is a permanent tax benefit that doesn't apply for CAMTI purposes. So if you're already sort of in the CAMTI soup, that's another one that could add to, you know, a small amount of a liability just to consider in the modeling exercise. And those are kind of the key things that we see really across all industries, but some of those are really critical for banks that could kind of move the needle on the CAMTI liability.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of ingredients in the soup, as you call it. And I agree with the FIDE opportunity. It may not be the driver that gets a bank into CAMTI, but it's certainly part of that, along with the credits and NOLs and other significant differences between book and tax. So yeah, once again, we can say the modeling is key. Dan, as you look ahead, what guidance do you still expect? Are there certain areas that you're watching?
So at the moment, Treasury and the IRS are working on a revised set of proposed regulations. And their goal is to get those revised proposed regulations out likely in early 2027, with a goal of finalizing relatively soon thereafter. So I think for the moment, there's likely a pause on substantive CAMPD guidance as they work on those proposed regulations, which I think means taxpayers have what they'll expect to have for returns that they're doing during this calendar year. Going forward, because there is going to be additional guidance, there is an opportunity to provide feedback to the government, either about rules that aren't working well or about areas that where guidance hasn't been provided yet, where guidance would be helpful.
I do think this industry has been good about feedback and getting their comment letters in as collective groups.
I agree with that. And the industry has been especially helpful in providing substantive suggestions about how Treasury can solve some of the problems that aren't so straightforward. Like, for example, how foreign corporations with branches in the U.S. might determine what their effectively connected AFSI is. And I think that coming in with a proposed solution is much better than just hoping the Treasury and the IRS land on one that works for you without your input.
Agreed. And I hope that some of those proposed solutions are exactly what we see for future guidance that can have the biggest impact to our banking clients. So, Steph, if you're a tax director at a bank thinking about CAMT, what's a takeaway from today's conversation that you want them to remember?
Can I say modeling?
I'm halfway through that question thinking, well, the answer starts with an M. All good.
Yes. I mean, I think it really is just like so much of what we look at these days. You know, we have our regular tax system, we have our BEAT tax system, we have our CAMT tax system. There is so much modeling when it's necessary in today's landscape. And this is no different. There are some key things that we've noted throughout this discussion. And I can also reference, we have a 174 podcast separate if you'd like more details on 174 specifically. But I think they're just considering those factors in the CAMT calculation. And as you noted earlier in the discussion, it maybe is more of a compliance exercise than a significant liability, but unfortunately the compliance burden is still there. So just being prepared for that and knowing what you're going to have when you get to complete your 25 return or your future 26 and forward returns, being prepared for those calculations. And hopefully clearer guidance soon-ish.
I agree. And though the burden may not be the actual liability, there's a lot to do and a lot to think about and how to do that most efficiently. So I appreciate you guys giving us some tips on that and talking through what you're seeing clients talk about. I would definitely like to have you back when we see some more of those proposed regs and guidance, and we'll keep talking through CAMT.
Thank you for the time, Shayliss.
Thank you.
And to our audience, thank you for joining today. This is Liz Lamadou on behalf of KPMG's Banking and Capital Markets Tax Practice. I look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks for listening to In the Vault with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.